Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And the Force Awakens. No, the show awakens. I'm sorry. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. I am not Brad Sesmatch. Of course, I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Greg Esposito. And I'm going to get this right. Senior Digital Manager, because I've been saying that word wrong all day. Suns Radio postgame host and my co-host today. And he has a bow tie on. Look at this. If you guys are watching, check that bow tie. Isn't that not nice? That is a nice bow tie. Thank you for dressing up for us,
by
the way.
Of course. Anytime I hear I'm going to be near the great Paula Bovin, I have to dress up.
What do you want from me? There must be
nothing.
Something.
I just want a good show.
Okay.
That's all I want.
All right.
I also want to give Brad a hard time here. All right. I hear he ditched the great people of the Valley to go play DJ Jazzy Jeff to Will Smith's Fresh Prince in New York City and then ride a horse around New York City. Or I assume he was in a carriage. I don't think he was riding the actual horse. But, you know, I got to give Brad a hard time every time I fill in for him because there's always some weird reason he's not here in studio.
Can he be the Carlton instead of the DJ, you know?
He's too funky to be Carlton.
That's true.
And I got the bow tie, so I guess I have to play Carlton in this scenario.
You're my Carlton today. I like how that segue. All right, if you're wondering what the heck is going on, we'll be talking sports here today on Sports 360 AZ. Obviously, a great show coming up because we have a great football game coming up on Sunday. The Cardinals, of course, in Philadelphia. We've got Suns coming up tonight. I'm going to pick this man's brain quite a bit because he knows all about the Suns and a lot of other topics. But let's jump right into the Cardinals, Espo. Do you think they have to worry about this game? I know people are talking about how poorly the Eagles have been playing. They're having a down year. I think about the matchups. I think the Cardinals win most of them. But you think there's concern?
I think there should be, because if you look back over the last handful of weeks, this isn't a team winning easily in a lot of games. They're winning last second. They're winning with Dwight Freeney spin moves that he's got to go in the way back machine to pull out so they can beat Minnesota. They haven't been taking care of business real easily. So any game I think they have to be worried about when they're playing like that, especially when you're playing on a Sunday night in a hostile environment in Philadelphia. Now, the weather isn't going to be too bad. It's going to be 45 degrees during the day, 34 at night. No chance for snow or rain or anything like that. But anytime you go on the road, anytime you play in a hostile environment, there's reason for concern, especially when you've been winning in interesting ways at the end of games.
Yeah, there's definitely that issue. And the thing that concerns me a little bit, too, has been the short yardage situations. I think of some of the games, San Francisco, Cincinnati, when there are opportunities to convert, they couldn't get it done. And I know they're still missing, obviously, their top backs. But I think that's an area they got to capitalize, because if you keep settling for field goals when you're that close to a touchdown, I think that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah, short yardage is a big concern. And you bring up the running backs, and I think David Johnson is still a rookie. He's a guy who's had a fumbling problem throughout the year. Kerwin Williams is a guy that was on the practice squad. There's concern with that. And when you don't have that running game, you can't set up the play action pass. You really limit what that offense can do. I don't care how many great receivers you have. If the defense knows you don't have to be overly concerned about that running game, they can cheat on the passing game, and that hurts you. So there's still concern. It doesn't sound like Andre Ellington will likely be able to go this weekend. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of concern for this. Should they win? Yes. They're more talented than Philadelphia. Philadelphia isn't a great football team. They're a okay football team playing in a bad division. And I think they need to have some concern, but they should win this game.
I had one of those just awful sports writer moments last week. I decided to do a feature on somebody different who I thought was really going to make an impact on the game. He's getting a chance to play more. So I do this story on Kerwin Williams, an interesting guy, interesting background. One of those guys people thought would never succeed. He was too short, blah, blah, blah. He has the worst game of his life last week, and I think he had 2 carries for -4. I'm not kidding, I got 3 emails from different people saying, would you quit writing about these people, because clearly you're putting too much pressure on them. So
I'm sure your column put too much pressure on
them. Yeah, it was my fault.
I love that writing, and we both kind of know this, can be kind of like playing fantasy sports, because you've got to pick a guy and hope that your story plays are kind of the right time in their season where they're successful because it helps your writing. It's very similar.
Absolutely. And you try to sort of target stories that you feel are going to be interesting to mm-hmm. people. And you try to think, oh, this may happen. And it didn't happen for me on that one. Other storylines, we've talked about Carson Palmer, how well he's playing. You lived in the Valley a long time. You've seen a lot of the Cardinals quarterbacks come through. How good is he compared to the guys you've seen on this organization? Is he the best?
Well, when you've seen a guy named Tom Tupa and Max Hall, and
I see where we're going.
When Dave Craig at one point was the thing you lifted up and went, this is what we're trying to get quarterback play-wise. Yeah, it comes down to three guys. There's a pantheon of, and I'll put air quotes, great Cardinals quarterbacks. It's Jake Plummer, Kurt Warner, and Carson Palmer at this point. Now, I think it's probably Warner, Palmer, and then Plummer, which apparently ER is the ending in ER is the key to success for Cardinal quarterback play. Maybe not. Chris Chandler wasn't all that great.
But hopefully not ending up in the ER.
But I think it probably goes Warner, then Palmer right now.
Absolutely.
Because Warner, even though it was a short stint, he took a team that no one expected to go to the Super Bowl and had them knocking on the door in the final minute of actually winning one in an error was most of the other years in Cardinals football, and an era where nobody thought that this team would compete. It wasn't like now where there were expectations of a Super Bowl. When Kurt did it, it was a surprise, a genuine surprise. So I think what has to happen for Carson Palmer to take that number one spot is for them to go on a deep playoff run and make the Super Bowl and be competitive. I don't think he has to win. I think he has to match kind of what Kurt Warner did, and then he'll be viewed as the best in Cardinals history, because what they've been able to do since Carson Palmer got here has been unbelievable, unfathomable when you think about it. Really, who knew Buddy Ryan would be right that there was a winner in town? He was just 20 years too early on the prognostication with it. So I think Carson Palmer is very good and could be great depending on a playoff run this team goes on. And definitely, he was the greatest trade in Cardinals history.
Well, the Kurt Warner, when I look back and followed, what he did when he arrived and on, the single impact he had on that team, and, a coach in Tennessee recently lost his job, which suggests maybe some of the success here had a little bit more to do with Carson Palmer, with Kurt Warner than we thought. But he didn't have the strongest arm when you're comparing to some of these other guys like Carson Palmer. But his ability to read defenses and the decision-making he made and the way he elevated the play of those around him, that just blew me away.
And you heard the stories back then about how he was coming to Wisenhunt with plays and drawing up offensive things. I think he was an offensive genius as a quarterback.
Yeah, he did great. All right. Let's talk a little bit, Suns. You're here. I want to pick your brain.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, you've never watched this team. You watched like every second of every minute of that team. Obviously, for Suns fans, there's some frustration because they thought they'd do better. I know there's been injuries that have been issues with some of the losses. One thing that has impressed me the last few games, and I haven't watched as closely as you have, but the level of play of Eric Bledsoe. Tell me where you think sort of he's heading and what you've seen his development since he's been here.
Well, let me start with the frustration of the fan base. Grab a seat on the Western Conference bus, because every fan that isn't a Warriors or Spurs fan is feeling frustration. When the Grizzlies are 14-13 in the sixth seed, something's not quite right when it comes to the Western Conference. But in terms of Eric Bledsoe, I couldn't be more impressed with a young man than I have been with Eric Bledsoe. Over the summer, I got a chance to spend a day with him and kind of see what his routine was like. And he was so dedicated this summer, so wanting to take his game to the next level and up his craft. And he point blank said to me, look, Greg, this playoffs is what I want. That's what I'm here for and what I want to get done. I want to be a leader, and I'll never be a vocal leader necessarily, but I want to be a leader for this team. He's followed through with all of it. He has been fantastic for the guys. His play on the court has been spectacular. He has the 10th best points per game, 13th in assists, and 6th in steals right now.
Wow.
He's averaging career best across the board. he's playing well, and he was the first guy to get a 4x4, four steals, four assists, four rebounds, and four blocks from the guard position since 2009 when Dwayne Wade did it. He's doing everything they could want from Eric Bledsoe. This is definitely not an Eric Bledsoe issue why they're under 500, because he stepped up his game to that next level. I think he is on the verge of being a star, a guy that can be a face or one of the faces of the franchise. And really, he has a legitimate argument to make this all-star team this year. Now, he's not going to get voted in. I'd love for fans to go out there and use the hashtag NBA vote and Eric Bledsoe on social media, hashtag vote PHX too, but and try to get him in. But we've got to understand, you've got Steph Curry, who's definitely getting in, and yeah, then you've got Kobe Bryant on the most bizarre farewell tour in NBA history, and he's getting the pity vote to get into that all-star game. So you got to hope coaches see the value in what Eric Bledsoe's doing.
I always found him sort of at least initially a tough nut to crack, mm-hmm, to kind of get an idea of his personality, and so I thought it kind of held back some maybe storylines that we could have written about or whatever. Do you find him hard to get to know, or has that changed a little bit?
When he first got here, yeah. I think he's a fairly shy guy.
Okay.
And I think
that
comes from, you know, growing up in a small town in Alabama and, you know, one year in college. I think he's just a shy guy. And what I've seen this year is that's actually started to change. He realizes, hey, I've found my home. I'm here. I'm playing well. Last night was a great example, a great event for Sun Six Man members out at Top Golf. He's sitting there and conversing with people, laughing. Like, that wasn't necessarily the Eric Bledsoe you would have seen a few years ago. He was much more reserved. And now, you know, he's coming up, hey, Espo, how are you? He's very, very talkative, and you kind of get to know that personality more. And he's got a pretty big personality when you get a chance to really sit down and talk with him. So that's what I like. I think fans will get to know him more and more, and that play is growing as well as the personality.
And this organization has sort of needed a face of the franchise. I just feel like it hasn't been there, and it feels like we haven't even really gotten a feel of Tyson Chandler yet because of the injuries that have kind of sidelined him, to get a sense of what kind of impact he can make.
I'm hurt. I thought me and the bow tie were the face that we've been searching for the
last
4 years.
Would this be the face? No.
He wants that as the face of anything. I'm surprised Brad wants it as the face of his show today. But no, I think Tyson Chandler, another great guy, a great influence in the locker room. And you're right, we haven't seen the impact on the court because he hasn't been able to find a rhythm. Injuries took him out with that hamstring. And once he gets out there and his impact is felt, you saw the defensive efficiency drop immensely when he wasn't out on the floor. I think that'll start to tick back up now that he's back out there, and you'll start to get to know him as well. Another great guy, really big personality as well, and I think he's a guy fans will start to like once he gets that opportunity on the court.
All right, he is Greg Esposito, better known as Espo, and probably will be known as that for the rest of the show. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat, here on Sports 360 AZ. We got a great show coming up. We're going to talk to Seth Joyner. This is a guy who tells it like it is. I'm looking forward to that. And my colleague, Bill Goody-Koontz, and I know there's a lot of excitement on Espo's end here about the new Star Wars movie. We're going to get into that, too, here on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back to the show. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Greg Esposito, Senior Digital Manager and Suns Radio post-game host. That's a fancy title there, by the way, Greg.
We need three business cards to fit it on.
Yeah, no kidding. We are, of course, filling in for Brad Sesmat here on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ. But we all know everything that anybody wants to talk about right now is the Cardinals, and I am thrilled to have our next guest, Seth Joyner, who a lot of you remember as a member of the Cardinals. He was also a member of the Eagles. He was a darn good linebacker, three-time Pro Bowler, now an analyst for CSN Philly. Seth, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
We're doing great. And, you know, I've got a ton of questions about this game, but I have to ask you first, as someone who was part of the lean years of the Cardinals, to see what's going on with this organization right now, I just wondered how it sort of makes you feel.
You know, listen, I'm happy for, first of all, for the city of Phoenix. Anytime, you know, you have a team that's having a type of success, you bring in, you finally find that coach, you finally find that quarterback, and, you know, now you're trending in the right direction. It's exciting for the for the city. It's exciting for the fans, you know, especially for the young kids that grow up, you know, turning into Cardinals fans and things of that nature. It's really good. It's really good. It's never good when a pro organization is not living up to the billing in a particular city. It just isn't. So I'm excited for what's going on with them and where they're headed. And, you know, hopefully they can bring a championship to this city. These fans here deserve it.
All right, Seth, I'm going to put you on the spot. Is Carson Palmer the best quarterback in Cardinals history?
Well, you know, when you start talking about the best in anything, you have to compare the eras and you got to compare the circumstances around it. You know, when I look back at my day and what you could do to a quarterback, what you could do to wide receivers at the line of scrimmage and what you could do to them after they catch the ball or before they catch the ball, the circumstances are markedly different. But if you take Carson Palmer and you put him in my day, will he be as successful? You know, conventional wisdom would probably say no, but, you know, he's living in an era now. You can only judge him by what he's doing now. And based upon an 11-2 record, you got to say, you know, what he's able to do and some of the records that he's encroaching upon, that he is, you know, probably the best quarterback, you know, in Cardinals history. And at the end of the day, if he can get them to an NFC championship, if he can get them back to the Super Bowl, and hopefully win one, then I think all questions, you know, go away.
Seth, I've watched sort of from afar what's happened with Chip Kelly. When he was at Oregon, I was a huge fan because of what he did. I was impressed when he came to Philly, seemed to turn things around, 2 10-win seasons. Hearing a lot of criticism this season for a lot of different reasons, and I know this is probably longer than a 30-second answer, but what is sort of your take on the job that he's done and kind of and the criticism that's happened this season?
You got a half an hour?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, listen, people feel the way they feel about Chip one way or the other. You know, I've never been a big fan of, you know, bringing college head coaches and converting them to professional coaches. You know, the analytics and the statistics just doesn't bode well for them, you know, that they are successful. That being said, he did come in year one and year two and go 10-6. As he began to tear it down, you know, to everyone's amazement, you know, how do you get rid of some of the talent that you had on that team? To me, that talent was the reason why he went 10-6. But I think, you know, when you begin to read between the lines of what he was saying is that, hey, I've taken this team as far as I can go, 10-6, 10-6, that's not good enough. So I'm going to tear it down and build it the way that I need to build it. I'm going to bring in my quarterback. I'm going to bring in my running backs. I'm going to bring in everything that I feel is necessary for me to run this offense the way that I need to run it. And it hasn't worked out. I mean, they're trending, you know, in a more positive direction these last two games. But overall, you know, they're not going to get close to a 10-6 record again this year. It's impossible. So the question is more, what's the difference? Now, Chip Kelly is slash head coach slash GM. From a GM's perspective, I don't think he's done a good job, because you have to look at, you know, he's always going to be compared by those first 2 years, you know. That's the sad part about his beginning. It was almost a curse for him to go 10-6, because it precluded him from being able to go into the draft and go get that young quarterback that could be his franchise quarterback long term. Now he's into year four and year five of his contract, and it's too late for him to do that. So he's kind of hitched his wagon, in a sense, to Sam Bradford, whether Bradford plays well or not. Because he's not going to be able to go out and bring in another quarterback and then use the excuse that, you know, hey, he's learned the system and all of those things all over again.
That's Seth Joyner, 3-time Pro Bowler. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, with Greg Esposito, Senior Digital Manager of the Suns and the radio post-game host.
Seth, I got to ask, big game coming up on Sunday night, Cardinals-Eagles. Do the Eagles actually have a chance to knock off the 11-2 Cardinals, or are they just a mediocre team that's being propped up by a bad division right now?
Well, I mean, I think the reason why you play the game is because, you know, on any particular Sunday or Sunday night for that matter, you've got an opportunity to win. I think the stars have to align perfectly. Things, you know, some weird things have got to happen for the Eagles to win this game. I think if they can, if the defensive line can dominate the way they've dominated the last 2 weeks, you know, Fletcher Cox seems to be unblockable. But if they can dominate and play with the same energy that they play with offensively, they can give the Cardinals problems. You know, we know that Carson Palmer isn't a guy that likes to move the pocket that much, although, you know, I've seen him move it more the last few weeks than he has, you know, ever in his career. But, you know, the kryptonite for any quarterback is pressure. So if you can get pressure on him, you know, you can cause him to make some bad throws. You know, he's been real good with the ball this year. But that pressure on the quarterback for this offense is going to be key because they run a lot of routes down the field that take time to develop. And when you do that and you don't protect, then that opens up the door, you know, for sacks, strip sacks, you know, first read, you know, miscommunication sometimes through the quarterback. And he's going to have to throw to his first read if they can get pressure. That's the, you know, to me, that's going to be the key to the game for the Eagles being able to hang in there. If they don't do that, you know, it could get real ugly. And then on the offensive side of the ball, Cardinals are a team that probably blitzes 45 to 55% of the time. The Achilles heel for the Eagles clearly is their offensive line. And if they get behind the sticks on first down, you know, then Betcher's, you know, M.O. is then to come on second down. If he comes on second down and they get a sack or they get pressure or they cause, you know, some havoc, now you get him in third and long. And now, you know, he's in your mind. Am I coming? Am I going to drop back? You know, what are they going to do? So, I mean, there's some intangibles there, and there's some things there that have to happen perfectly for the Eagles to win. But I don't give him much of a shot, to be honest with you.
Well, and Seth, that sort of leads to my next question. You addressed it a little bit. You know, the Cardinals have been very successful, I think, throwing the deep ball against almost everyone. And I'm curious how much the Eagles have brought on pressure this season. What's sort of been the MO of that defense as far as getting to the quarterback this year?
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I've been critical about, because if you go back to their game against Tampa Bay and their game against the Dolphins, I mean, there was like a three-game stretch there where I expected for them to win those three games. And then I expected for them to lose to New England, but that was before Gronkowski got hurt. And I expected them to lose to, gosh, I watch so much football, I can't remember who they played.
That's all right.
But I expected for them to it was a 50-50 proposition that they, you know, win that game last week. Well, those three games in there, they lost. One was against Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston threw for five touchdowns against him. And what you normally do is you bring pressure and you mix up your coverages and you do things, you know, to a rookie quarterback that you've never seen before. That's the advantage that you have, and they would not come after him. And he just sat back there and he shredded them to death. Then you fast forward to the Miami game, and they blitz more than they blitz all season long. So I don't know that I really have a drop on Billy Davis Jr. and what he might do. I know that, you know, they've been banged up in the secondary, and he's a lot less likely to bring pressure under those circumstances. But you can't sit back there and let Carson Palmer dissect everything that you do. You've got to make him make quick throws and quick decisions, and those quick decisions have to be sight adjustments off of the blitz. Because if he has time and they can pick it up, then he's going to make life real miserable for you on a national stage. So I'm not so sure, you know, what the MO is, to be honest with you, because they've shown the propensity to be very aggressive, and at times they show the propensity, you know, to just sit back and bend but don't break.
All right, Seth, can you indulge me for a second? I grew up a big Cardinals fan since the early 90s. What was your favorite memory of playing here in Arizona?
Well, listen, you know, I played in Philadelphia for 8 years. You know, one of the main reasons I left was so that I could get off the turf and get on the grass and get in the sunshine where it was nice and warm. A lot of people don't like this, But, you know, what I really actually enjoyed, I enjoyed the beginning of the season, September and October, when it was blazing hot. And I used to always get pissed off because, you know, because of the heat, you know, we'd always get, you know, the first four games of the season, we get one home game and three games on the road. Oh, it's too hot. And I was like, that makes no sense. Because what happens when teams have got to go to Green Bay in January and December and they've got to play football in those extreme conditions? That's a benefit, you know, and an advantage for them. Our advantage was being able to play in the heat. But I loved playing in the heat because it got my body warm, it got my bones, all the aches and pains, and I got a chance to be on the grass and play on some natural turf. You know, I loved playing when it was hot. A lot of players don't like that, but I would much rather play when it's blazing hot than when it was cold. And we had a lot of games, especially early in the year, where the weather was just, you know, perfect for me.
Let's keep that one in the archives, Eric Sorensen, because I don't know if I've ever heard that answer. That was awesome, Seth. Really appreciate you joining us. I love your straightforward approach to answers, and thanks a lot for all the analysis.
No problem, guys. Have a good day.
That was Seth Joyner. Espo, that's great. I mean, I love a guy who tells it like it is, even if sometimes it's not it's hard for fans to hear.
Yeah, especially when he's talking about the heat. I remember sitting in Sun Devil Stadium when it was 110 out watching him play, and we didn't really enjoy it on metal bleachers, but it's interesting to hear a guy in a helmet and pads actually had fun with it.
And he makes a great point about the whole going to Green Bay, you know, having to play in those conditions. It should work both ways. All right, he is Greg Esposito. I am Paula Bovin. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat here on Sports 360 AZ, and we'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ and simulcast on azcentralsports.com. I am obviously not Brad Sesmat. I've got some hair and a bow tie, so that does not make me Brad. I am Greg Esposito with the Phoenix Suns. Happy to be joined by Paula Bovin, columnist for AZ Central Sports. And Paula, I don't get a lot of chance to talk about the Diamondbacks, so I thought this would be a good opportunity to hop into it. Some big moves the Diamondbacks have made this offseason, obviously adding Zach Greinke, a big trade to bring in Shelby Miller. I think I got that right.
Yeah, you got that right.
I think I got that right. And some moves to really go push the chips all in this year. I don't know that I'm a huge fan of the mentality of going all in because, quite frankly, I'm a little gun shy after they did it after the 2011 season where they went all in after they made that playoff run. I'm a little hesitant. I get the thought process because you've got Paul Goldschmidt in the prime of his career trying to make a run with him, but are you mortgaging the future to try to do something right now? Is it too risky, do you think?
No, I think this is exactly what they had to do. And yeah, you're spending, what, $206 million on one pitcher. I know that people think that's crazy. But you look at the teams that have been succeeding lately in baseball, and you can talk about, you know, what the Oakland A's have done in the past and small ball and all these other things. But you need to talk about getting top line pitchers. That's the key to success in Major League Baseball. You look at what the Dodgers have done in the past and the Giants. You have to do that. And by getting Miller, by getting Greinke, adding into the rotation with Corbin and some other guys, they are a threat at least three times in the rotation and possibly more. I just think they had to go this route because nothing else was working. And I know you talked about 2011, but I think back the beginning of this franchise when Jerry Colangelo spent a ton of money. A lot of it was on veteran players with name recognition, but there was also the Randy Johnsons of the world and the Curt Schillings. And, you know, people talked about how he mortgaged the future. It cost them quite a few seasons after that. I think they still have Bernard Gilkey on you know, that extended payment plan.
That's one of my favorite things. I need to get on a Bernard Gilkey kind of plan.
Would that be awesome or what? I mean, in fact, I talked to him last year about that paycheck, and he was living nicely, and he was very happy, even though he hasn't played baseball in quite a few years. But that worked out just fine. I mean, obviously, it cost them some decent seasons, but they won a World Series, and that's what this town wants, and this is a city that you've got to win, and you got to win big to keep their attention.
I agree wholeheartedly that you've got to win and you've got to try to make a run. My question is with Zach Greinke, usually paying all that kind of money to a frontline starter makes sense, but he's 32. If you want to throw a lot of money Diamondbacks at a 32-year-old, I'm here for you. I'll take some money at 32, but it's usually the exception, not the rule, that a guy at that age is going to wind up outperforming what he's done or performing at the same kind of top line level that he has. You bring up Randy Johnson. I think that was an anomaly. Obviously, most guys aren't going to do what Randy Johnson did into his early 40s.
Right.
I don't think you're going to see Zach Greinke do that. So I think you're banking on two or three really great years out of him and hoping you make that splash, you make that impact in those front few years of that contract.
Well, people I've talked to say he's a young 32 in the sense of his arm and things like that. So there's confidence there. Obviously, I believe in the Diamondbacks in the sense of doing their homework. They've got a great medical staff, so I think they believe he's going to be healthy. I think you throw in Shelby Miller in the mix, and I know that's the one that got a lot of national people all worked up because, you know, some of the players that they lost, including Dansby Swanson, you know, why would you give up on a prospect with all this potential? The thing with this team is they need proven talent more than they need potential right now. In the last couple of years, the number one picks in the draft, in fact, are now elsewhere. So it's not unusual that the top pick in the draft is being moved anymore. It used to be. I just think you have to go with proven talent versus potential because of where this organization is. They are not putting people in the seats. They are not winning. You mentioned that window with Paul Goldschmidt. This is the prime of his game and his life, probably, as far as baseball. They need to capitalize on it.
Look, potential is the biggest four-letter word in sports. All right? I hate that. You're gambling, basically.
Right,
that's
right.
What it comes down, especially
right.
In baseball, when you have 18-year-old guys playing in podunk wherever and hoping that they turn into something. So I'm fine with kind of dealing with that. Where my problem with the Shelby Miller deal is, I think you lost the name game because you trade a Dansby and an Ender for a Shelby. I don't think you win in terms of good first name or good names.
Well, the name
on your
is
roster.
You know, is really key to success on the professional level.
It's got to look good on the marquee, but I think you're right. You have to take chances with those prospects. You're not going to win now with guys that are sitting in your single A, your double A, and they have a pretty stacked farm system. I do like that they're trying to go for it in Goldschmidt's prime. I think this was a mistake the Cardinals made with Larry Fitzgerald. You had a top-line guy, one of the best in the game, and you didn't surround him with the talent he needed to be able to win at a high level in the prime of his career. So I like that the Diamondbacks are actually looking at that and going, you know, we've got an MVP caliber kind of guy sitting there in Paul Goldschmidt. Let's surround him. Now, I don't know. I don't know that this is necessarily a World Series team. If Zach Greinke plays the way he has, you're much closer because that's a guy every 5 days, you know, can basically stop a losing streak or, you know, can extend a winning streak. I don't know. Is it there? Is this a team that's going to compete for the NL pennant and a World Series?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big mystery, and it's been fascinating to see the rest of the National League, react to the Diamondbacks when everyone's always been reacting to the Dodgers. Yeah. Now the Dodgers are kind of the ones that are scrambling a bit when they were the big money guys. So it's going to be a great, at the very least, fans are going to go into this season with hope. And I feel like they have not had that hope because it sort of felt like a lack of vision for a couple years here. Bottom line, I think there's hope. I think people are excited about that rotation. I think Shelby Miller's going to surprise some people. I know that, again, people thought they gave up too much. But everything I've read about how he's improved his repertoire, his sinker, his cutter, not just relying on the fastball, I think he's going to be great in that rotation. If you're wondering who's just going on and on, I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Espo, also known as Greg Esposito, Senior Digital Manager, Suns Radio post-game host, and can also talk a little baseball, which I respect.
Well, you brought up hope, and I'm going to go complete Arizona sports fan. For those of you that don't know, I grew up here in the Valley. I'm a big fan of all the teams, and when you say hope, all I hear is Bane from The Dark Knight Rises. Without hope,
no.
There's no true despair.
Oh, dear.
And that should be on every Arizona sports fan's big flag that they wave is without that hope, there is no true despair. But I think they're moving in the right direction. I think you're right. Shelby Miller will surprise. I actually feel better about that move than I necessarily do about Greinke because that's a long-term move, a guy that has room to grow. His best years are probably ahead of him rather than potentially behind him. I wonder how Tomas is going to play. It's going to take time to build some chemistry with this roster as well.
You know, the talk of you know, people are talking World Series. Could this be a World Series team? And it made me think back of that great era with the Diamondbacks playing the Yankees in the World Series after 9/11, the emotions. When this team came to town, you were a lifelong fan. Yeah. Were you excited about having professional baseball? Did you, you know,
yeah.
Was that a big deal to you? Or
well, yeah, because, I mean, I grew up with the Phoenix Firebirds, before that Phoenix Giants, and watching AAA baseball. But there's nothing like when the big show comes to town. And then when you talk about those moves that they made in 99 and into 2001, it legitimized baseball here. The first year it was nice to have a team. It was great to just be able to experience baseball for the first year. But then they legitimized it, making that playoff run in 99. 2001, all of a sudden, your major players, you get to the World Series and you shock the vaunted Yankees, and in a city where you've got a lot of Yankees fans, even in this town. So it was pretty amazing, and I hope we get back to that. And I hope across the board these teams in town win, because there's nothing like the civic pride in Phoenix when a team's winning and the impact it has and how we come together as one, because we're a very fractured city. We're all from somewhere else for the most part. And when those teams win, we really come together. So I hope, for the Diamondbacks' sake, Suns, Cardinals, Coyotes, I hope everybody starts to win, because this city becomes a much more vibrant place when that happens. The thing for baseball with me, though, is it's so weird to be talking a potential Diamondbacks Cubs NLCS. That's what people are talking about right now. And I'm like, this just doesn't make sense. Especially, I mean, Phoenix would go nuts between the Chicago and the Arizona fans. But it is so very weird to hear the Chicago Cubs in that discussion as one of the best in baseball. It's uncomfortable for me.
Frankly, you're making me nauseous hearing this. As a Southsider from Chicago, growing up loving the White Sox, I was born and continue to have told not to like the Cubs. It has turned into a full-blown hate, so we don't mention that word on this show. You know, talking about, gosh, when you look back at the Diamondbacks and their success, it seems so long ago, that era of just when they were doing well. It was good times, baby backs, all those great times. So I know this is what the Diamondbacks are trying to get back to when there is, you mentioned civic pride, when that was part of the storyline here in the Valley.
Paula, there's plenty of pride coming up as Star Wars is the next topic we're going to talk about with Bill Goody-Koontz from the Arizona Republic and AZ Central. You're very familiar with his work. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about the biggest movie of the weekend next here on the Brad Sesmak Show. It's the Brad Sesmak Show here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. I'm obviously not Brad Sesmak. Brad is out on assignment. It actually takes two of us to fill the big guy's chair when he's out. I am Greg Esposito from the Phoenix Suns, and joined by Paula Bovin of AZ Central Sports. And really excited to bring in AZ Central Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Goody-Koontz. Bill, how are you today?
I'm good.
All right. We got to talk about something, and I'm being forced to talk about this because I am not a Star Wars fan,
Boo.
Bill. I'm just going to admit it Boo. Straight up front. I don't quite understand the fascination with it. Tell me why I should care about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Well, if you like a hive mind kind of thing, I mean, because everybody else does, and it's what you need to keep up with what's current in the world, maybe. I don't know. Other than that, it's just, I mean, it's a lot of fun. Dude, when you say you're not a fan, does that mean you've never seen the movies, or you've seen them and you don't care one way or the other, or you kind of like them or you kind of don't?
I've seen them. I just didn't get into it. Most of my friends, my brother, big Star Wars fans, watched all the movies, dress up, read the books. I never got into it that much. I thought they were all right. I enjoyed some of the storylines, but just never really got into it.
Well, I'm not a whole lot different than you are. But I mean, I'm a fan, but I'm not a fanatic. I cannot tell you what kind of bolts they use to keep the wings on the Millennium Falcon or whatever.
You can't?
I guess the Millennium Falcon actually doesn't have wings. So there, I've betrayed myself already. But I do like the stories, and I mean, you know, this is pretty much my Super Bowl. this movie, and I've covered the actual Super Bowl. I've never been around this kind of hype, and I think I wrote something about this actually. I think one of the reasons for the hype involves social media, and whenever even like the hint of something about this movie came out, It was all over the internet, all over Twitter, all over Facebook. All I had to do was write a blog post that would link to whatever this rumor was, and boom, I get a ton of hits. You know, I mean, it's blog gold, as I used to say when blogs were a thing. But the good news is the movie's actually good, and I don't think you'd have to be a big fan to enjoy it.
What about the acting in the movie? Just sort of break down the acting versus the storyline.
Well, it's funny that one of the real novelties of this movie, one of the real new things in this movie, is that there's actual acting in it. I think anybody who saw, you know, certainly the middle three in the last, you know, 10 years ago, but even the ones before, I mean, the lines are not great, and I mean, there's some iconic lines in there, but overall, this, you know, it's kind of cliched and stuff. But the thing that's good about this, J.J. Abrams is the director, and I think that I genuinely think he was, like, born to make this movie. I think that this is, like, what he was, you know, some people, you know, you're supposed to, this is what you think they're supposed to do, this is what he was meant to do. And what he does with these bad lines, and there's some bad lines in this movie, is somebody will say a bad line that they kind of have to say because of something that's going on in the movie, and then he'll make a joke about it. He'll have a character joke about it, or he'll do something visually that'll sort of let you know that he knows, you know, come on, it's a bad line, but we got to get through it. Let's just move on. And I really liked that. I thought that was pretty clever way to deal with it.
So this movie is worth the hype, then, that we've seen surrounding it?
Well, you said that's the thing. There's so much. I don't know that anything is worth the hype. I'm trying to think of what would, accepting tragedies and stuff. I mean, let's not talk about that. But I'm trying to think of any development or any event, because this is not like breaking news. It's not news that this comes out today. You know, what would be bigger? What would be more hyped than this? And I really draw a blank. I mean,
the Kardashians, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, if the Kardashians were in it, that would be...
Oh, God, please, no. The Kardashians and Star Wars. No, no, no.
Kim Kardashian with those Princess Leia hair buns.
Good Lord. Bill, there's a lot of talk, too, about sort of the return of Harrison Ford, of Carrie Fisher, of Mark Hamill. Are you able to talk about that without giving away too much? I haven't seen the movie yet, so...
They're all in it.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll tell you what's cool about this is they are all in it, and they're not just window dressing. I mean, they're central to the plot. I will tell you this: this movie is a 2-hour and 15-minute spoiler. Literally, from just about the second frame of this movie, there's a huge spoiler.
Oh wow!
And I'll say this without giving it. You know, when they scroll up, you know, dun dun dun, dun, mm-hmm. and they kind of catch you up on what's gone on since the last time. The first sentence is a spoiler.
Jeez, so, okay.
Well, good to know.
So, and it frames the story, and but that's a good thing. I thought that was cool. But they, the original guys are still in this movie, and they are part of it. But what's kind of cool is they're old. They don't pretend like they're still young running around.
That's
know?
Good. Yeah.
I mean, Harrison Ford does a little bit of running around. And I found myself thinking, you know, it's like it's a sci-fi movie, so there's like a lot of debris and stuff. You know, stuff gets blown up and stuff. And so he's kind of running around, and he's sort of gingerly, like, you know, trying not to step on, you know, a piece of a blown up something or other. And I just kept thinking, this is as much me as him. I was thinking, just don't fall, don't hurt yourself. It's like,
well, no wonder he broke his actual leg, though.
I thought that a lot, because when he is doing a little bit of running around and stuff, it is around all this stuff. And I thought, man, it would be really easy to break your ankle. But I just kept thinking, take it easy, man. Just, like, slow it down a little bit. You know, like, let the world come to you. Although, but Han Solo is never a Jedi, right? So,
well, I know you put out your list of top 10 films, I think it was a week ago. If that list had come out now, would this movie have made it?
Yeah, I changed it. I made it number 10. I am sorry to say, and my children are despondent to learn, that me and the Earl and the Dying Girl fell off the list. That would now be number 11, I guess.
I'm just glad you validated my Ex Machina feelings with your list. I was very happy about that.
That's a great movie. And Alicia Vikander is having a great year. And another movie that comes out today, at least in the Valley, is The Danish Girl, where Eddie Redmayne plays the first person to undergo, or one of the first people to undergo sex reassignment surgery. And Vikander plays his wife, and as good as she is in Ex Machina, she's better in this.
Wow. He looks great in the previews, too. I don't know. what did you think of his performance, or did you have you seen the movie?
His performance is good, but it's kind of like the thing that's different in the two of them is, I mean, he's a great actor, and there's no question, and he's really good in this. But you kind of always can tell he's acting, you know what I mean? And it's like with her, it's a little more natural. And I'll say that, I mean, this sounds flippant, and I don't mean for it to be. He's very attractive when he becomes a woman, and one of the parts of the story is. At first, he dresses up. They go to like a party, like an artist party. They're both artists, and they go to a party, and he dresses as a woman. And the story that they're telling people so that they can play this game is he is the guy's cousin, who's visiting from wherever, and people buy it because he looks that way. But Eddie Redmayne has this way of, again, I think he's a great actor, but he's kind of quiet.
Mm-hmm.
and really understated, and he's got this weird thing he does, not just in this movie. He smiles all the time, like this kind of sheepish grin.
Yeah, that's his kind of M.O., you're right.
And he does it all the time in this, and it's like you never know, is he happy? Is he sad? Is he tortured? Is he, it's like what, evidently something, he wants to change something, but it's good, and it's a really good-looking movie, as you would think. I mean, it's about two Danish artists, they really go a lot of way, but it doesn't take a lot of chances or anything. You would think that a movie about transgendered people with those two actors with a really good director would never be boring, but it kind of is. I mean, it's really straightforward.
All right, Bill. Well, thanks for taking the time and kind of sharing your thoughts on this week at the movies, and we'll talk to you soon. Well, Brad will talk to you soon.
Yeah. Are you guys going to go to the movie?
Of course.
Going to see Star Wars?
I'm not going to dress up, though, I got to tell you.
Well, he was... He's Bill Goody Kuntz of AZ Central, the chief film media critic. Thanks, Bill. And also, Paula, it's been fun here today. I've really enjoyed it. It's been, entertaining to fill in for one Brad Sesmad here.
Never had a co-host with a bow tie before. It's a first.
There's
you wear it well.
You probably haven't had one that has done this much sarcasm or snark as well. So I appreciate it, though. It's been fun to do it, and I always wanted to. Glad to get a chance to do it. So for Paula Bovin, I am Greg Esposito. Thanks for watching the Brad Sesmad Show here on Sports 360 AZ, and we'll talk to you next week.